Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
If you think about what the food industry puts out for children, you know, they're really making it difficult for parents to promote consumption of fruits and vegetables and a healthy, non-processed kind of diet.
Soccer finally comes of age in the USA.
Oh, the Sounders playing it, making it, playing the game to win.
He heard the first pow and tried to duck. But even at 12 years old, he was 5'8½. Ducking wasn't easy, and outrunning a bullet isn't possible no matter what you see on TV. He fell to the ground before he knew what was happening.
Welcome to this week's episode of the WVXU Discovery Podcast, Start Here. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Get set for a quick overview and sample of three podcasts today, two national and one locally produced, to help you navigate the ever-growing world of the podcast phenomenon. Plus, we're introducing the all-new Start Here Blast weekly e-newsletter. You'll get a personalized email with a podcast we feature on Start Here. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here Blast email from the bottom of the page. Also, now you can rate Start Here on iTunes. And if you're a fan, a 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. So don't forget to rate us on iTunes today. And now, with special thanks for technical assistance from Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and writing research and curation support by Connor Eldridge, it's time to Start Here. With busy schedules and supermarkets stocked to the brim with thousands of different brands and options, it's easy to lose track of what we're eating. And a good diet is essential to any healthy lifestyle. For advice, important information, and healthy food tips, look no further than The Salt podcast from NPR. The Salt will help you get the most out of your grocery store, filling you in on what's filling you up. The Salt looks at all aspects of food, where it comes from, what's in it, why we eat the things we do. You'll learn about the world-famous custard treats made only in Portugal, or what added sugar really means, and updates on foodborne diseases circulating real-time. The result is a helpful podcast that's chock-full of the good stuff, with none of the fillers or preservatives. Here's a sample from a recent episode of The Salt called Want Your Child to Eat Everything? This episode delves into diets of kids, exploring techniques that get your kids to eat healthier and enjoy doing it. In a world of fried chicken nuggets, pizza, and french fries, The Salt offers alternatives to the conventional kids' menu. In this clip, they explore why kids are drawn to fat and sugar and why they're targeted by advertising for these kinds of foods.
Viji says that's how she was raised back in India. And it's the way most cultures have fed their kids for most of human history. But American culture sends parents a very different message. Kids' menus full of so-called kid food, like chicken nuggets, pizza, and fries, are everywhere. And of course, they're popular. Fatty, salty, and sweet foods appeal to kids. It's basic biology.
They're born preferring salty and sweet. And if those tastes are in foods, most kids are going to be very attracted to them.
That's psychologist Leanne Birch with the University of Georgia. She's spent more than 4 decades researching why kids eat what they eat. We spoke via Skype, and she said parents should expect their kids to reject new foods at first.
And that's really just an inbuilt, you know, response to something that's new.
But if you expose kids enough times to different flavors, including sour, bitter, and even spicy ones, but don't force it,
you know, with no pressure to actually consume it, they typically will learn to eat a lot of new things.
Some people recommend sprinkling a bit of sugar or salt to help kids accept new foods. But Birch says you have to be careful.
That works, but it can come back to bite you, I think.
Because the kid might end up only liking the food that way. But Birch says many American parents aren't just battling biology, they're also battling our food culture.
If you think about what the food industry puts out for children between the ages of 2 and 12 as things that are appropriate for them to eat, you know, they're really making it difficult for parents to promote consumption of fruits and vegetables and a healthy, non-processed kind of diet.
And that might be the bigger battle, really.
It is the bigger battle.
Ideally, all kids would eat whatever their parents eat from the time they start solids. Pediatrician Eric Ball works with Chuck Children's Health Network in Southern California. He says that ideal can be hard for parents to live up to.
You know, it's hard as a parent to go to work, to make money, to come home, to try to whip together a dinner really fast and serve it to your kid, and then they don't touch it.
Ball spends a lot of time counseling parents on nutrition, and he says this situation is pretty common.
And it's very, very tempting to just give them something else, you know, make them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or chicken nuggets.
And he says it's okay to do that every once in a while.
But over time, that gets worse and worse and worse.
Instead, Ball says parents need to be role models for their kids at the dinner table.
In other words, parents have to eat what they want their children to eat.
And if you don't want your kid to demand chicken nuggets and ice cream, don't bring them home.
So once a food is brought into your house, the child is either going to eat it or you're going to have a fight about it. So you're going to lose either way.
But if you've made a nutritious meal and your kid still won't eat it, Ball says don't stress out about it. Your kid won't starve.
I very firmly believe that children do a really good job of eating when they're hungry and not eating when they're not hungry.
Ball points to advice his mother-in-law received from a pediatrician 40 years ago, back when his wife was a toddler.
Expect her to eat one meal, play with one meal, and ignore one meal.
He says that's still excellent advice for parents today.
A pinch of a sample from The Salt Podcast from NPR. Check out The Salt for more food facts and figures, available right now on WVXU's Podcast Central. The World Cup's in full swing now, with just a few nations vying for the coveted title of champions of the world. And as we in America watch from the sidelines, it's easy to wonder just what went wrong with our team. But this isn't the first time the men's national team hasn't lived up to expectations. In his new podcast, American Fiasco, sports journalist Roger Bennett recounts the tumultuous, scandal-ridden story of the 1998 World Cup, where a promising U.S. team was knocked out after losing three consecutive games. Bennett weaves in an intricate, detailed narrative of the drama and the divisions that doomed the team from the start, revealing more to the story than ever before. With firsthand interviews and in the clubhouse details, you'll get the full account of the U.S. team's insane journey to the 98 World Cup. We picked a sample from the first episode of American Fiasco called The Dream On Team. In this episode, they examine the dark ages of soccer, which were eventually broken by a 1989 World Cup qualification. The episode dives into the background of soccer in America, its history, and why it just never caught on here. In this clip, Dan Katz, sports commentator and co-host of the popular podcast Pardon My Take, offers some of his opinions on why soccer has always been second fiddle in American sports culture.
In 1950, soccer was so insignificant that the United States World Cup victory in a first-round game against the mighty English, who were then one of the greatest teams in the world, it barely registered in the American media. The US team back then, it was a ragtag bunch. A minor league baseball player, a paint stripper, and a Haitian-born dishwasher who scored the winning goal.
They were strangers with nothing in common.
Here you go to Yale, you Neanderthal.
I never went to no college.
But their passion for a game.
There was even a movie made about it.
The game of their lives.
The 1950 team's manager, a bloke called Joe Noumi, he was one of the first Americans to utter the great doom prediction, "This is all we need to make the game go in America." In fact, the US didn't qualify for another World Cup for nearly 40 years, and no one cared. Another one of those future is now moments arrived after the 1966 World Cup, when the North American Soccer League was born. NASL, I know, it doesn't exactly roll off the tongue.
Soccer finally comes of age in the USA.
Oh, the Sounders playing it, making it, playing the game to win.
But even with imported stardust, like Brazil's Pelé, the league was a fad that first burned brightly, but then flamed out. By 1985, the NASL wasn't filling the stands, and it went belly up. During that dark age, Americans didn't just ignore soccer, they actively hated it. And I always found it psychologically revealing.
So I feel like the answer that always is given is the lack of scoring. And it's a little bit of a cop-out, but I think there is some truth to it, because you can watch a soccer game forever and no one will score.
This is my friend Dan Katz. He's better known as Big Cat, the co-host of the remarkable podcast, Pardon My Take, from Barstool Sports.
And it's painful to watch, you know? We want scoring, we want big plays, we want big hits. We're Americans. And the fact that you can tie in soccer, which is the most un-American thing in the world.
What's a tie team?
A tie is brutal. And the fact that you can tie after playing an entire game makes no sense.
Seems like a weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have a winner. So scoring, not fully understanding the game. And to be totally honest, and this is probably revealing a little bit of our own, insecurities.
Let's go there.
Yeah. Our own insecurities as Americans. We suck at it. That's the big one. Winning. We need to be the best. Because when I'm watching MLS or I'm watching, whatever it is, whatever league you want to watch, pick it. America's not the best. When I watch the NBA, I know the Golden State Warriors, when they win the NBA championship, they are the best team in the world. When I watch the NFL, when the Philadelphia Eagles win the Super Bowl, they are the best football team in the entire world.
World champs.
World champs.
The podcast, American Fiasco, from WNYC. You can listen to the entire story, drama and all, right now on WVXU's Podcast Central. And this week's Local Spotlight is a podcast with national implications. It's called Aftermath, and it's an episodic look into the lives of gun violence survivors. On Aftermath, two Cincinnati Inquirer crime reporters travel the country talking to a diverse range of people with one defining thing in common. They survived a gunshot. In the series of heartfelt, intense interviews, Aftermath explores how the lives of the victims and their families are changed in the blink of an eye, the pull of a trigger. You'll hear many different stories, some of them life-changing, some of them inspiring, all of them tragic. In a nation where gun violence victims quickly become statistics, Aftermath is doing the important work showing the deep, devastating human cost of guns for individuals and families. In this episode of Aftermath, we picked, called I See Him Every Day, that documents the story of Michael Green, the victim who was shot in the arm when he was only 12. Michael was playing basketball near his house when someone opened fire. He says he still lives down the street from the alleged shooter, who was never tried for the offense. In this sample, Michael and his mom recount the harrowing story of the day that he was shot just one block from his house.
It was mid-March 2012 when he asked to go play hoops. LaShonda immediately said no. Finish your homework first. Oh, come on, Michael said. I just have one thing left to do, and it's for art class. I can do it later. LaShonda relented. She moved her car to the street so he could play in their driveway. After a few minutes, he asked to go to the neighbors instead. She did the mom thing and asked him who all was there. The list was short, and she knew all the names, so she said, fine, go ahead.
So then, like, maybe, like, 10 minutes later, not even 10 minutes, I heard, like, boom, pow. So I'm like, wait a minute. If the sound was coming from that way, which I knew that Michael went down the street that way. So I stopped and I got up and I ran down the stairs and I looked at the front door because the front door was open. And I looked and it was like a car was hit on the side. It was on my car. So it was, I see this guy trying to get out on the passenger side, but he was stuck on my driver's door side because he couldn't get out. And at this point, I kind of like jumped back and I'm like, wait a minute.
The scene was a confusing blur. She knows now that a car driving by reacted to the gunfire and slammed into her parked car, which she had just moved to the street. But at that moment, all she knew is that her son was standing upright but had blood on him, and that she had heard what she thought were gunshots. This other car slammed into hers just added to the confusion.
And it was like everything was moving slow. I thought it was a dream or something. So I stepped back and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, wait a minute, Michael down the street. So I went out the door and I ran in front of on the sidewalk and I looked down the street and I'm like, Michael, I'm calling him. I'm like, Michael, are you shot? Are you shot? I'm like, I'm up here calling him like, are you shot? Because in my mind was telling me, no, he's not shot. He can't be shot. That's he had blood on his shirt. He had on some black Nike shorts. I remember that, in a white t-shirt and has blood all over it. And I'm like, that can't be his blood.
The way she describes it, she was battling two reactions at once. One that insisted, no, this isn't happening, this couldn't happen, he's standing up so he must be fine. And another that knew she had to get him to the hospital.
So instead of me running towards my son, I run back into the house. So I ran upstairs to grab my purse because in my mind, I'm like, I got to take him to the hospital. But I couldn't because my car, the way they hit my car, they were stuck on the car and they jumped out the car. The guys, whoever it was, they jumped out. So in my mind, I'm thinking that they were doing the shooting. I didn't know what was going on.
She doesn't fully understand her reaction now. She regrets not running to him straight away. Her brain told her she needed to grab her purse first. Never guess how you'll react in that kind of situation, she says. You don't know until you're in it. Michael's memory is from a different vantage point. He remembers seeing a hand come out of the window of a black tourist-type car driving by. He heard the first pow and tried to duck. But even at 12 years old, he was 5'8½. Ducking wasn't easy, and outrunning a bullet isn't possible no matter what you see on TV. He fell to the ground before he knew what was happening.
I just remember I asked my neighbor, like, okay, help me, and I got up. And I had a lot of blood, so I would just put pressure on my arms because I seen a lot of movies, and you know, that's how to keep the blood for, you know, losing a lot of blood. So I put pressure on my arms then. I was looking for my basketball as well. So I got up looking for my basketball as well. Then I got up, I'm like, man, I gotta go home. Something wrong, I gotta go home. I walked home. Honestly, I feel like I was just in a tunnel vision, like just getting straight home. Like I didn't see nobody in the car. I ain't noticed the car. I ain't noticed the house on the side.
But he knew faster than his mom that he'd been shot. He also knew that calling 911 in Detroit was a crapshoot. At the time, the city police were averaging a 30-minute response time to the highest priority calls. A neighbor sprang into action and took both Michael and mom to the hospital. LaShonda prayed the whole way.
A snippet from Aftermath, the podcast from the Cincinnati Inquirer and USA Today. You can hear more of the remarkable and horrible stories of senseless gun violence in America with Aftermath, out now on Podcast Central. Let's check out the scorchers on the Apple Podcast charts. As we said from last week, the podcast Hysteria is continuing to climb the charts. It's now at number 2 behind the latest Joe Rogan Experience episode. And the biggest mover on the charts this week, a new podcast, Nerds with Words, debuting last week and jumping 59 points into the top 30. Actually, they debuted about a year ago, but they just cracked the Apple Podcast charts. Nerds with Words is a comedy podcast hosted by comedians Adam Nutter and Greg Trout, where they interview guests of all types, comedians, doctors, authors, scientists, historians, educators, other podcast hosts, and actors. They have an organic conversation and just see where the conversation takes them. That's Nerds with Words, the biggest mover on the Apple Podcast charts. That wraps up this episode of Start Here, WVXU's Discovery Podcast. And speaking of discovery, astronomical discovery, that is, you want to check out our newest original podcast, Looking Up, with Dean Regas and Anna Heyman. Dean's the outreach astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers and author of the book Facts from Space. Anna's the observatory's director of development with an innate curiosity about the cosmos. That's Looking Up, now at WVXU.org. And if you're turning into a podcast junkie and just can't get enough, try these two new discovery resources, NPR's The Big Listen with Laura Ober. You get an audio peek into great storytelling podcasts. And for a more blog-like written review and recommendation, NPR has Earbud.fm. They use unique categories to help you discover podcasts with things like advice, do it like a lady, and big ideas. And of course, Jim Nolan, Kevin Reynolds, and the WVXU staff feature our favorites on Podcast Central at WVXU.org. That's where we'll add your recommendations if you just email us at podcast@WVXU.org or call 513-294-8030 and leave us a voicemail. I'm Trip Eldridge for WVXU, and thank you for choosing to start here.